Yesterday, the lawn of the White House was turned into a Roman amphitheatre, complete with cage, crowd and grown men paid to beat each other bloody, staged as a birthday present to an 80-year-old president. And by the end of the night, this was the moment everyone was talking about.
And lastly, Michelle Obama is a man! Am I right, America?
Ladies and gentlemen, Josh Hokin.
A former First Lady, not there to defend herself, called a man on the lawn of the White House to cheers, because that, it seems, is where we are. And hold that thought, because it matters for what comes next. Because at the very same time that the 80-year-old president was hosting his birthday blood sport, millions of other Americans were doing something else entirely. They took to the streets again. A fresh round of No Kings protests, a town after town, the largest sustained wave of protest that the country has seen in a generation. And like clockwork, the response from the MAGA crowd was the one that we always hear. It's fake. They're paid, they're crisis actors, they've been bussed in. It's AstroTurf, it's Rent-A-Mob, none of this is real. Which brings me to my guest today, because here is a man who really does this for a living. He sells protesters crowds to order for whoever's prepared to pay.
A lot of times there's a case where hippies with a trust fund are out there protesting, but conservatives are more likely to have jobs and families, so actually they require a little bit more of an incentive to turn out to a demonstration.
Only he says he doesn't just work for one side, he'll do it for anyone. And after he went on Fox News to come down on the side of the federal government, and after he claimed that someone once offered him millions, $20 million actually, to manufacture an anti-Trump crowd.
You say you turned down a $20 million offer to recruit and pay protesters against Trump?
We went and looked at the actual history of his work and we found some genuinely disturbing things. I'm just going to rattle through a few of them. In 2018, in New Orleans council hearings, paid actors that your company provided in matching shirts, scripted testimony apparently for a gas plant, some given fake identities, including posing as Hurricane Katrina survivors.
So it's a little rich that the New Orleans City Council, a place you can probably walk in with a briefcase full of cash, right?
The council fined the energy company $5 million over it. That's not small beer. I mean,
yeah, but that's just performative. I mean, that's just performative. Okay. That's just performative outrage. But this is how things get done in Louisiana.
That you were looking for very tall people that were very big because they're more intimidating, yes. Apparently. Is that constructive?
Well, that's what LA Times just took that word out of context.
You know, which word did they take out of context? Intimidation.
Intimidating.
Okay.
And so what I meant was the word intimidating has two meanings. Intimidating can be used like menacing, and intimidating can be used like a strong presence.
His name is Adam Swart. His company is called Crowds on Demand. I asked for 20 minutes. He had a 40-minute chat with me, and it was genuinely fascinating. This is Outcast World.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true. It's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, homie? When we get together, we be simple. Simple. It's simple for me.
He will, like, go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
We'll start with this. You become a real go-to voice on protest. I've been watching the clips. Before we get kind of into the headlines, take me back to the start.
That's correct, Graham. So yeah, I started this business almost 15 years ago. I was a student at UCLA. I worked on a lot of political campaigns, mostly on the Democratic side. I definitely consider myself a political independent, but if you are doing anything in California politics, it's really got to be on the Democratic side, although we'll see how you're the fellow subject of His Majesty, Mr. Hilton, does in the gubernatorial contest. We'll see. But at any rate, that'd be funny, honestly, because if he actually does win, then the two Republicans who were governor of California will both have been foreign-born in the past this century. California, the law really pushes the idea that you have to have public hearings on anything consequential on a local state or state issue, or even like ultra local neighborhood issue. Why was that? So, because to fight the idea of the smoke filled back room, right? So in the old days, you know, pre the progressive era, if we want to get into American politics, the progressive era was in the early 1900s. All these decisions would be in a smoke-filled back room, maybe union bosses, management, big corporate bigwigs. They would all decide this stuff. So One of the ideas, especially in California, that we have is the idea of public meetings. You have to have a meeting that is advertised, that is open to the public, with the relevant decision makers in the room where everyone can comment. So what do? Companies like ours, but also interest groups, everyone, what they need to do is they turn people out to the meeting. So now the contest, instead of it being in the back room, now it's like who can turn out the most people to this meeting,
right?
Which, right, in some respect, could that have a correlation to what the public support is? Sure, but it's basically each interest group is trying to turn out their own people to try to convey that has the highest level.
So this is where you come in. This is where your business comes in, right?
That's correct. That's very correct. So oftentimes, now, what the misnomer about my business, Graham, is that a lot of people think, oh, well, Adam, as you know, someone who's paying protesters, right, we're worse on the side of the small minority. Well, actually, in general, we are not in that side. We're actually on the side of the silent majority.
How so?
So what happens is, okay, so let me give you an example. So LA City Council, so we could talk beyond California because our company is nationwide, but this is where I got my start. So I probably know more about California than anywhere else.
Well, didn't you start with kind of paparazzi, celebrity, kind of drumming up kind of a bit of something around that?
Yeah. So, but basically in California, so this is a good example. So there was a bill proposed in the Los Angeles City Council to ban child sex offenders from camping near schools. Right? Because a lot of people in LA live at kind of cabin tents. They're mostly junkies, unfortunately. So that, to me, that's self-evident, right? Why, of course, that should not be allowed. Well, there was no one in the city council that was there to support this bill. Why? Because we would assume that was banned anyway. I mean, if you ask any normal person, right wing, left wing, they would assume, like, of course they can't have that. That can't be the case. Well, 300 protesters stormed the LA City Council meeting to oppose this idea.
So were these not your protesters? These were different protesters?
Of course. Yes. So my point is, these guys, I don't know whether they were paid or not, but they were basically agitators who were opposed the idea that child sex offenders should not be allowed to camp outside schools. So the point being is there's a lot of nutty people who can bring in large numbers and then persuade the public, the public officials, to adopt their side of things. So Crowds on Demand is often there as actually the oppositional force, because the people that we recruit are actually just normal people. They just, they're working
actors,
their job.
They're not normal people, they're actors. By
well,
definition.
Well, that's actually a little bit of a misnomer. So,
but what would you call them? Started, you're hiring them to play a role. I mean, for most people, they would say that was acting.
Yeah. Well, so let me put it this way. So when I started this business in 2012, yes, it was mostly actors. It was like the gig economy before you even called it that. But here's the thing: we have changed over the past several years, and our focus is providing sincere, enthusiastic participants. So maybe they're actors, but maybe there's someone who works the shift at McDonald's.
Sure,
right?
So a lot of actors do, because there's not a lot of work. But these are people pretending to be something that they're not being paid. We can agree on that, can't we? The reasons.
So what are they pretending? So if you support, let's just say you support the idea of better public transit in your city.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. So let's just say I'm doing something in London. I say, you know, we want more funding for the tube. Right? Well, okay, that's great. Well, the people who support so I get a bunch of people who are working at, you know, Weatherspoons or Marks and Spencer, whatever they're working at, whatever the jobs that they're working at, you know, but they have kids, they have responsibilities. So I have to pay them to show up to express their sincere views.
But they weren't the sincere views. Some of them were acting. So I mean, I'm sure some of them share that view, but what you're giving them a financial incentive, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm compensating them for their time. And like, I don't know actually in the structure of this show whether you're compensated, but you should be compensated, right? You are working, you are doing this show. I assume that the opinions that you express are your sincere opinions, right? Well, you are presumably getting paid, or if you're not, I hope you do soon get paid to host your show. So that does not negate the sincerity of your opinions. If you are an attorney and you are a left-wing attorney or a right-wing attorney, you could be a sincere attorney and yet get paid for those views, to express those views. So the principle of being compensated does not in and of itself negate the sincerity of your views.
Okay. So the idea that the silent majority is more likely to be busy working, bringing up families. So the suggestion by that is that the silent majority often refers to a kind of conservative majority, doesn't it? So the suggestion is that the people on the other side, the left, don't have jobs and don't have responsibilities, which I think kind of doesn't really stack up. They've both got jobs and both got responsibilities.
Well, by the way, when I say silent majority, I don't mean right, left. I mean, for example, when... But let me be clear. For example, in the United States, people who want common sense regulation on firearms are the silent majority. So there's a vocal, I think most Americans support the Second Amendment, but they don't want convicted felons to be running around with firearms, right? But you have a small minority on the far right that controls the politics that prevents that. So when I say silent majority, let me be clear. I'm not I think there's a silent majority that sometimes supports the quote unquote left wing position, and there's a silent majority that sometimes supports the quote unquote conservative position.
Okay.
But this is a challenge because I think the debate among the left is actually more what can we do while still winning, whereas the debate on the right is more irreconcilable. So if you think about the debate between Starmer and, you know, the more left-wing, you know, Polanski or whoever, Jeremy Corbyn, whatever, right? A lot of it is that Keir Starmer is like, look, Keir Starmer won, right? And those guys did it, right? So the last two Labour politicians to win were both moderates. They were Starmer and they were Tony Blair. All of the non-moderates, I mean, Miliband tried to kind of thread the needle, but he wasn't very charismatic.
No,
so
that was the issue. And Corbyn was monstered by the press in the same way Sanders was. You know, Corbyn was monstered. Corbyn won a bigger majority in the 20. We had a general election in 2017, and he won a huge number of votes. But because of the system, it was distorted, wasn't it?
But Corbyn ultimately, he won more than was projected, but he did lose.
He did the first-past-the-post system, but in terms of the share of the vote, Corbyn actually had a higher share of the vote than Keir Starmer had, but because of the way that, you know, how it's diced and sliced.
Constituencies and all that. Well, and this is sort of the challenge, and this is why the two-party system is so powerful. And I don't like the two-party system in our country. What's kind of interesting is, our systems have actually gone the opposite way. So in Britain, you have two parties, the Labour and the Tories, that have both kind of gone to the center, right? And the people at the more edges are like, WTF, they're not reflecting our views. Now, in our country, in the United States, we have two parties that have both gone to the extreme. The Democrats have gone more left and the Republicans have gone more right. So it's kind of interesting. In your country, your two parties, traditional parties, have gone very much to the center, which leaves gap in the extremes. Our parties have very much gone to the extremes, which leaves a gap in the center.
So who defines the center? I mean, I think that's a crucial thing, isn't it, as well? The person who defines the center ground is the person who defines what all parties would gravitate towards.
Well, that's also the challenge, Graham, is that what is the center? I mean, so this goes back to crowds on demand. I like to say I'm common sense. Now, common sense certainly has some overlap with center. Like, I consider myself a centrist, but centrism is often associated with weakness. And there are certain policies where I support a more left-wing policy. For example, in America, I'm a leftist on healthcare. I think people shouldn't have to pay a dime for healthcare in this country, because I think the fact that in America, when you get a cancer diagnosis, what is the first thing most people do? They put up a GoFundMe. I mean, this is uncivilized. This is barbaric. So you can call me a far leftist, but I'm sorry. I don't think people should die because of lack of access to healthcare.
No, I think we very, very, very much agree on that. I think we really agree on that.
But simultaneously,
Can I ask you a question about you've got on your so it's your own website, it says you've run campaigns that ended forms of anti-LGBT discrimination by insurance companies. That's a real claim. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. So I'm sure you may be aware of there's a drug called Truvada, also known as PrEP, right? So this is a HIV prevention drug.
So our listeners are very familiar with PrEP. It's been a game changer for gay men in particular. They're not dying anymore.
Absolutely. And it's a critical drug. So what's fascinating about this, and what was horrifying actually in seeing this, is insurance companies were denying life insurance coverage or jacking up the rates for people who took PrEP, right? So this, or Truvada, right? So this is a backdoor to discriminate against the LGBT community, because obviously
it's straightforward discrimination, that, isn't it, really? If you're seen to be taking preventions for HIV care, to then discriminate against you there's no gray area in that.
I completely agree, Graham. And in fact, that should actually make you a better candidate for insurance. The fact that you are taking this drug could prevent the onset of those of that disease.
So how did you help out here?
So what we did was we pushed. So in the United States, every state has what it's called an insurance commissioner. So those guys, for the most part, are elected officials. So their job is to regulate the insurance companies. So we organized protests, we organized phone banking, we organized in-person meetings for these insurance commissioners, particularly targeting those who claim to be LGBT friendly, and said, look, you have to take action and you have to put these insurance companies on notice that this is unacceptable. You shouldn't even be asking about this. And you certainly should not be using this in any way as a means to deny people coverage. And actually, in particular, so of course, California and New York are two of the biggest states in the United States, both who had very friendly to LGBT issues. So we really focused primarily on those two states, in addition to others. But those two states both kind of announced that they were looking at this. Their insurance commissioners announced it, and it maybe 2 weeks later the issue was resolved.
Interesting. And, Who put you up to that? I presumed somebody somewhere paid.
Sure. Well, I'll put it this way. We have a lot of customers that love to be in the background. And
I imagine
even on
they all
like
would
this,
rather be in the background.
Well, and I'll tell you why, is because they don't want to be the subject of the hate and vitriol on the internet, right? So think about how hateful, I mean, you know, as anyone who's been in media at all knows how hateful the internet can be toward both liberals, conservatives, whatever, they'll pick on you, whatever. So a lot of donors actually use us as a vehicle to advocate for their positions.
Okay.
Because in the United States, the Supreme Court has actually affirmed the right of anonymous civic participation. And the reason that's so important is the idea like, hey, maybe I am the CEO of a publicly traded company. Maybe I'm on the board. I should be able to engage in politics in furtherance of my convictions and not kind of experience professional consequences or threats or whatever.
Is this not just another term for kind of like dark money shielded from any scrutiny entering politics? This is just a different way of arguing about that. My issue with this is paid advocacy ultimately serves whoever has the deepest pockets, as I see it. And the deepest pockets have rarely been on the side of minority groups, LGBTQ people in particular. So how do you see this as anything but a tool for power to fake a grassroots that it sometimes doesn't have?
Well, can I dispute your premise a little bit? Well, at least, again, speaking in the United States context, actually, big money groups were actually some of the biggest forces, now, not initially, but over the past 20 years, on the gay rights, LGBT rights issues, right? It was actually corporations that have actually put pressure on officials to actually do the right
How
thing.
How are we so saying this? We're not talking about Target putting a pride flag on its thing, are we? Are we talking more conservative?
I'm talking about companies saying, look, if you're going to kind of adopt certain like bathroom laws, I mean, you know, the type I'm talking about, where you say, oh, well, you have to use the bathroom in your original gender of birth.
Or the disabled bathroom is a new development in the UK. Yeah.
Right. I like my privacy. I just want private stalls. I prefer gender neutral private stalls. I don't want to be urinating next to anybody
I've got a gender neutral bathroom at home. I always say this to people. I use a gender neutral bathroom on a plane. It's not a problem to me.
That's right. Although those aren't the best, but yeah. What I would say is that the corporations now, again, for their own purposes,
okay, yeah,
have actually done a lot to further the LGBT issue in the United States.
What, is this because at the time, when the Democrats were last in, there was people, I guess some companies thought that this was a way to curry favor. I used to work for a very big media giant who paid for a huge DEI program, and I was at the center of that. And then the political winds changed, and the way to curry favor with those in charge, and I think often at the White House, was to strip out all of that. And I think sometimes people have whatever direction the winds are going in, they're using them sometimes. Well, corporations are 100%.
Corporations are focused on making money. Of course they are. It's a capitalist society. But your premise was saying money has never been on the side of the LGBT community. And what I'm saying is that's not explicitly true. That it actually, in the recent past or even today,
I don't know about today.
Yes,
I mean, all I'm seeing today is the ultimate reversal of our rights.
Well, I think on the trans issue specifically, some companies have been kind of pulling back, correct. But it is now in part due to major corporations, including, by the way, Hollywood, right? And again, Hollywood it's fun to beat up on Hollywood. They should be beaten up on, by the way. But on the other hand, Hollywood was pushed a lot of LGBT acceptance, you know, through whether it's through shows like Will and Grace in the 1990s, whether it's, you know, and whether it's through writers and a lot of other things. So the idea that money hasn't helped the LGBT community, believe me, there was a lot more money for LGBT causes than against. So if you look at in the past 20 years in the United States, yes, the LDS, the Mormon Church is the main funder, maybe some evangelical groups funder against it. There's a lot more money. If you look at any LGBT related ballot measure, there's a lot more money for it than there is against it. So the money has definitely been on the side of the LGBT community. Why? Yes. So if you're saying, okay, there's ulterior motives. Yes, there's the whole society, the glory of our country. And why I'm happy that we separated from your wonderful country is that we made a better system than you, in my opinion. I hate to say it, but our system in the United States is based on self-interest, right? It's not based on people doing the right thing. It's based on people serving their self-interest. So before our founding fathers wrote the Federalist Papers, right? Where they were arguing about how do we actually form a government? We know people are not perfect. We know we ourselves are imperfect, right? The founding fathers were slave owners. They had plenty of flaws themselves, and they were intimately aware of their own flaws. So they understood that they need to make a society that was based on people not doing the right thing, but doing what's in their enlightened self-interest. So a corporation that supports LGBT causes because they think it's good press, because they want to get LGBT consumers, whatever the case may be, is still doing the right thing. The fact that they might be doing it for reasons that are impure is actually fine. And it's like there's a very, very few people are going to do the right thing if it doesn't suit them. People will mostly only do the right thing if it does suit them. It's incumbent on a system to support people to do the right thing.
Okay. So it seems that this business that you're in, that started out following celebrities and has since been used for all kinds of different stuff to influence public discourse, it seems it can be used one way or the other way. And we've had some really concrete examples there. And thank you for that. It's really up my eyes. There are some specifics and some things that have gone on in the past. I mean, I'm just going to rattle through a few of them. In 2018, in New Orleans council hearings, paid actors that your company provided in matching shirts, scripted testimony apparently for a gas plant, some given fake identities, including posing as Hurricane Katrina survivors. Help me square that with constructive advocacy. I mean, admittedly, we don't always get things right all the time, but what happened there?
Well, first of all, let me say, it's New Orleans politics is a little bit of a rough and tumble world, right? Eddie Edwards, the former governor of Louisiana, once said in Louisiana, well, keep in mind, this was a long time ago. In Louisiana politics, you're not in trouble unless you get found with a dead girl or a live boy. So it's a little rich that the New Orleans City Council, Blaise, you can probably walk in with a briefcase full of cash, right? And like,
they're not here to defend themselves. Let's make that completely clear.
Yeah, please have them on there. Yeah, have them on to defend themselves. But there's a it's a little rich for them to kind of install. I mean, look, I don't know the specifics. Look, we work all around the country.
But the council fined the energy company $5 million over it. That's not small beer. I mean,
yeah, but that's just performative. I mean, that's just performative. Okay. That's just performative outrage. This is how things get done in Louisiana, first of all. But number two, they needed... So let's talk about the power plant, right? So we can go into the tactics. The power plant, New Orleans, I know that you've been, but is a dysfunctional city that suffers from rolling blackouts constantly, right? So they needed that power plant. And in poll after poll, Sure. I mean, I'm not an energy expert, but they needed the plan. Go to New Orleans, spend a few weeks there. You'll see they have power outages. So they need it. In fact, in poll after poll after poll, 70, 80% of people supported this idea because they supported the idea of the plan. What happened? Well, you got a small minority. This is what I said, we're for the common sense. Small minority of people who oppose this plan, but those are the people who probably lived nearer to it, and they were organizing against it, right? So there was a smaller minority that opposed it. Vast majority supported it, right? Of course, you need people to organize, but the problem is people who are going to be directly affected by something are going to show up to the meeting. People who are going to overall benefit from something are going to go about their lives, and they're not going to do it. So that's where companies like us come in to do that. So look, as a result, we having people out there to be paid in support of their sincere position, this position shared by 80% of New Orleans, I feel like makes a lot of sense. And in fact, that plant was approved. This whole, everything else is just performative outrage for clickbait, for the media, you know what I mean? Because I know my other English friend, John Oliver, was mad about it, you know, like, whatever, like, it's just all performative outrage, you know, self-masturbatory
okay
stuff.
I hear you, and it's a strong argument that you're saying these people, essentially it's the same argument, isn't it, that the normal people are too busy going about their lives, and you don't want small groups of people who've got too much time on their hands. So I hear that. Another one for you. That same year, a Czech investor sued you under federal racketeering law over protests outside his home and a campaign to push him off the Dartmouth and Aspen boards. Now, you've called these claims meritless. Are they meritless? Because you were being paid by a some sort of investment fund to do that against a rival based on some sort of mining contract in the Czech Republic. I just wanted to know what your take was on that, and if there was anything to it.
That one has been resolved, and there was actually that was resolved. And I, one thing is about a legal process. So the first one I can comment about because there wasn't litigation.
Well, I've read that you've settled, you handed over your documents, you agreed to testify against the man who hired you, and you published an apology. We've got a bit of the apology here. That's what I've read.
So that is one of those ones where, because of that, the fact that this was all resolved on a legal basis. Okay. I can't really give a further comment on something that was resolved. So, like, it is kind of interesting. I actually do have, like, an interesting analysis on this. So, like, there's always litigation back and forth on different things from, like, just in general. Like, I'm not talking about myself. But what's interesting is in the media, people are like, oh, well, what's your comment on this or that in legal? Well, unfortunately, in the legal setting is once something is resolved or even as something is ongoing, you can't necessarily comment on it.
I understand that.
Once it's resolved, it's resolved, and I think that. It was resolved to everyone's satisfaction.
Okay. Do you still advertise for people? Because I'm sure we've got listeners who probably, you know, maybe free sometimes that would love to help out. Are you still advertising? Is this still an ongoing thing, really kind of recruiting people?
Well, we're constantly doing events, we're constantly working, so we have to keep recruiting people, and we're always interested in more people if they're enthusiastic and really passionate.
Tall, like, what I about always tall say, people over 7 foot and 300 pounds? I've seen this one. Is this true? That you were looking for very tall people that were very big because they're more intimidating, yes. Apparently. Is that constructive?
Well, that's the LA Times just took that word out of context. Okay. You know,
which word did they take out of context? Intimidation.
Intimidating.
Okay.
And so what I meant was the word intimidating has two meanings. Intimidating can be used like menacing, and intimidating can be used like a strong presence. Like this 100-foot tree has an intimidating presence.
Okay, it's an interesting use of language. Yeah.
Trees are menacing. Yeah, but it's interesting. I mean, you guys invented the language, not me. But so what I would say though is that we're always on the lookout for people, and the reason is because I want people who are passionate. So let's just say we're doing an event pushing for police funding. I want people who support police funding. They're the most effective advocate.
They're the most convincing.
Someone who says, hey, I was Trump. I have a convenience store, a corner store. And I worry about people who are menacing me, right? So those type of people are actually going to be more convincing than some random person who doesn't care about the issue. So I find that if you have sincere people, not only is it more ethical, and believe me, so look, obviously, we've been in business for 15 years. So there's obviously going to be cases. It's like, if you go to Starbucks, sometimes you get a coffee that isn't great, but overall you want to have a good coffee. In Britain you have Costa coffee, which is I really don't
not
like.
A big fan myself either. No, it reminds me of service stations.
Yeah, so that I really don't like. You're never going to get it, but I want to be more like Starbucks, where you're going to get a good cup of coffee. Now I like to have people who are really good people, who are really enthusiastic about the cause, and that's going to be more effective. And in fact, not only I kind of went in earlier to the segment of that we vet the causes, but we also vet the people for two things. Number one, we want them to be enthusiastic about the thing they're supporting. But number two, we actually want them to be, we want them to be committed to our principles of peaceful, respectful advocacy.
Okay.
And we interview them. And that actually costs us money. I'll put it this way. A lot
I feel
of
like
times
you should interview them. I feel like you should. It seems like you should be interviewing people that are going to go out and do that. What if they're
right,
criminals or something?
Well, I would put it this way. That costs us money. A lot of our clients are just like, just get us bodies. And I tell them, like, no, we're not going to, we have to get quality people. Yeah. And even if that costs us a little more money.
Okay. I'm going to wrap. I really appreciate your time, by the way. This has been a really fascinating chat, and thank you. Last thing, a genuine one. You've built a company that can manufacture the appearance of public support for people who can pay. And you've explained to me how that can be diced and sliced either way. Depends who it is and what's going on. And it sounds like you think very deeply about these things as well. When you imagine the country that maybe this kind of practice could leave behind, a place where sentiment could maybe be bought by the hour, is that the kind of democracy that you'd want you or your family to live in?
Well, it's a good question. And I would actually say the right of protest is actually helps more often the less powerful. We talked about insurance companies. We talked about we didn't get into big tech, but we've taken on big tech. Delete Facebook. We've confronted Facebook on their misleading algorithms that turn Americans against each other and also turn people outside the United States against each other, arguably fomented a genocide in Myanmar, about 10 years ago against Muslims. So we've taken on these companies. Here's the thing. Large billionaire interests can buy up our politicians. They can create a revolving door of lobbyists and congressmen and parliamentarians, right? They can hire the best lawyers to drag out any court case for years. But one thing that they cannot stop is the right of people to assemble, not in this country, not in America. So yes, we do charge for our services. And yes, our services are not cheap.
But when ICE shoots protesters, I feel like that is something that sticks for me there. I agree in principle. We both agree that people should be able to speak, they should be able to protest. But when government agents essentially seem like they're assassinating certain members of the public who are on the wrong side, I feel like that leads to a distorted society.
Well, wait, can you maybe expand on that last part?
A distorted society. So if people are, it leads to a society where people will feel like they can't go out and exercise their right to protest because there's the fear of physical retribution from the state.
Well, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. Okay. That's unacceptable. And it's certainly unacceptable what I've seen in the UK. I know that the Crown Prosecution Service has rolled back some of the think before you post. I mean, that is straight up Orwellian, yeah. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, and you can't hold up a sign with a certain phrase on it or say it in public without being dragged away. Yeah.
You know what's so funny is the American right has been up in arms about this. But as you know, of being on the left, those same rules have been used against the environmentalist advocates.
Do you know, in London, there were a group of environmentalists on a Zoom call. They didn't even block the motorway around London. They just went on a Zoom call and they've been locked up for several years.
This is insane.
Yeah.
They were sitting in support of that and merely expressing support of
on
that.
On a Zoom call.
So I think it's actually unfortunate that more ACLU types in the United States haven't gotten on board with this because, frankly, the left has also suffered in England as a result of this. I mean, it seems like they're rolling it back. You know, like, for example, this, what's his name? The Father Ted guy, the Irish gentleman who was arrested at Heathrow.
The guy that was the writer, Graham Linehan, his name is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I used to watch Father Ted when I used to live in Ireland as a kid. And like, I used to watch the show, whatever. Like, what he said was offensive. I agree. Well, criticize him on Twitter, criticize him wherever. But what he said cannot possibly be illegal, right? Similarly, those environmentalists on the Zoom call cannot possibly be illegal. So I agree that if the state was, but what I've seen, yes, you are right that the ICE has treated protesters unacceptably, but overall, we have the right to protest in this country, and you've seen, by and large, that has been affirmed, and I am here, and I've regularly been an advocate against censorship, whether it's come under the Biden administration or under the Trump administration. I'm an equal opportunity person because, frankly, my business thrives on free speech, so I'm doing it for my own self-interest, but I oppose any kind of censorship, you know, by either right or left wing.
Okay. Thank you for the chat. Really appreciate it. Adam Swart from Crowds on Demand. What a fascinating chat. Thank you very much.